Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T Studios. That is Susanna Collins, who's already laughing. Bobby Warshaw is ready to go. Kalen Carr seems very locked in and ready for what's going to be a phenomenal show. We've got a ton to cover. We've got Open Cup games from Wednesday night. We've got MLS coming up this weekend. A ton of rivalry games, transfer rumors, transfers that have happened. And yet, we still have to start with the biggest thing going on.
Oh, from New York. Oh,
no. So Andrew Weavy is not here, which means apparently all of the children think it's time to take over. We're going to try and control that.
We are off the rails already.
Can we run that back? That was amazing.
That's Bobby Warshaw.
That sounded like an old-timey. Yeah, the old-timey radio voice is exactly what it was. It's good.
Have you never heard that before?
Never.
Do you actually agree with 100%. Bobby that you think he does what he's trying to do?
Yes.
I don't think anyone has ever agreed with Bobby.
Some of us understand New York better than others, David.
That's true. Yeah, I'm a big Houston guy. That's where I would live if I had my preference. But getting back to what we actually wanted to talk about, let's start with the U.S. Women's National Team winning, of course, their fourth star. They had a parade in what city?
New York.
You weren't even ready when I needed it. And you two went.
We did.
How
we were there.
That?
We were amongst the people, weren't we, Kate?
We were amongst greatness.
It was... I knew there was going to be a great turnout for this parade, but it was literally like 10 people deep on the streets of New York. And it's just, and like when you see little boys wearing Megan Rapinoe jerseys, like it just warms my heart. It was so awesome. It literally was Kalen. But we were kind of super fanning a little bit. Yeah. When the floats came by, like I kind of like freaked out a little bit. Like, I was like, oh my God, Ashlyn Harris, who I am completely obsessed with, by the way. Her and Rose Lavelle.
You were doing an IG takeover.
I was attempting
to imitate what Ashlyn Harris has done. There is excellence.
Number one, how in the hell are these ladies still even like upright? Yeah. Because they have been
they're
on a straight like 3-day bender.
They're at the ESPYs. I watched them in the morning.
Like, they probably haven't had a drink in like 2 months, you know, leading up to this.
True.
And then, like, to be able to still stand
what
and
if
party
we found
that
out
hard.
That they actually went through the entire World Cup drunk.
I mean,
they're just
heroes.
That good.
Then they're even bigger heroes, let's be honest. But the parade was great. It was, I mean, just such good feeling all over the place.
Can I step in here for a second? Susanna's making it seem like we were, like, on a float Rose Lavelle and Ashlyn Harris and the crew.
In my head, that's where we were,
Kalen. We were, like, in the back, deep, buried in the back, and we tried to get a super zoom for MLS's Instagram account. But
yeah, there was no special privilege.
Yeah, it was a little humbling for me. I think I got a wave from Rose, but it was sort of one of those kind of, like, what do you call that wave when you kind of twist the arm? The queen wave. Yeah, exactly.
My favorite part of the parade, which we did not see because, as Kalen said, we were
deep
in the back. But Bobby, your friend Kelly O'Hara runs off one of the floats to get beer from one of the fans because she tweeted out, "Somebody bring me a drink." And then these like girls showed up with like two like massive cans of beer, and she runs off the float, grabs them, gives them a hug, and then runs back out.
Suze, I think of that as the 2010 Kelly, and I'll tell you, it's something. 2010 Kelly O'Hara is a sight to behold.
It was awesome.
Wasn't she a striker back then?
She was. She won the Herman as a winger.
Okay. I think I remember that.
But moving to outside back is bad. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
A little reasoning there for Bobby. Megan Rapinoe closed the whole thing out with one of the greatest speeches in world history.
That was off the cuff, too.
Yeah,
can we talk about that? Like, as somebody who, like, has to memorize lines and, like, you know, deliver lines, that is, like, she just got up there, and I'm like, I mean, she could do whatever she wants.
She got up literally after a dude who's running for president and spoke better off the cuff than he did prepared remarks.
She's been used to upstaging certain.
That's true. That is true.
Political figures.
Yeah.
That is a comfortable position for her, and she's done it very well.
She's owning everybody right now.
She ended the ESPYs with a quick, "I've dropped an F-bomb on every stage for the last 3 days, so I'll spare you guys this one," which I thought was very
cool. I just want to point out, what she said to Carlos Cordero, I thought was the best. That was LBJ style politicking, saying, "We believe in you. You're going to work with us," as they go into the negotiations. It was a little thing that didn't get much comment, but her level of politician knowledge to throw that in there in the middle of the speech, I thought was incredible.
So Alex Morgan actually gave a good shout out too at the ESPYs to the NWSL.
Oh, the NWSL,
ESPN picking up their rights. So that was kind of cool too. Also a smart move.
So they were literally at the parade. on Wednesday morning. Wednesday night, they're in LA for the ESPYs. And they're all like they have a glam squad on the plane. Yep. And they all come out and they look like a million bucks. And they I just want to be you guys. Yeah.
They had dresses ready for them. Somebody picked out a bunch of outfits. Oh, they got to walk through, pick their outfits before they got on the flight.
This is a dream. It's a dream. Honestly, I want to be all of them.
Yes. Yep. Winning the World Cup looks really
fun. Also, if you're going to win something where you want to pop champagne, you might as well do it in France.
Yeah.
In champagne. I'm pretty sure they've just been carrying the same bottles around for the last few weeks. It's been awesome to watch. It's not over yet. The Victory Tour coming up in August. Of course, NWSL has games this weekend. So if you're in a market that has one, and if you're not, you can watch on ESPN. Go to a game, check it out, go to the website, get involved. That's where these players play all year, and that's where the best players in the world play all the time, and it's been awesome to watch so far this season. Of course, in classic fashion, the U.S. Women's National Team celebrating the World Cup ending, so CONCACAF had to drop some major news right off the back of it that blew everyone away. They are adjusting World Cup qualifying for 2022. They announced the format for it, so the top six teams in the region based on the FIFA rankings go directly into what we know as the Hex, the hexagonal, where they will play home and away series. The top three teams in that group, as usual, will move on to the World Cup. The fourth place team will face off against the winner of a group stage into knockouts of the 7th to 35th ranked teams in CONCACAF. All of those teams will be split into eight groups. The winners of those groups will go into two-legged knockouts up and up and up until the one winner will face off against the fourth place team from the Hex. That winner will face off in an intercontinental playoff to get to the World Cup.
Speaking of doing this off the cuff.
My lord.
There was no prompter or nothing for that?
You guys, I'm CONCACAF TID.
Did you write the press release?
The amount of information that just came out of your mouth in like a 90-second span was astonishing.
Okay, so I comprehended none of that. So can you please explain what this really means?
Kaylin's still drunk. So what it means is it used to be that you started with the lowest teams in CONCACAF and they would play a few knockouts to get to the stage where Mexico, U.S., you know, the bigger teams would join, Costa Rica. Then they would play a small group stage, and the winners of those group stages would go into what we know as the Hex. The Hex decided the winner. The U.S. lost in the Hex in the last qualifier. Now, the Hex is already decided. No one's qualifying for the Hex. It's based off your FIFA rankings. The top six teams automatically go in there. They will play the Hex as they always do. The top three teams, as usual, will go to the World Cup. The fourth place team now will face off against the team coming out of, I guess what you could call a different tournament of qualifying that all the lower teams are in. They'll play group stage, and then out of the top winners of the group stage, they'll all start playing each other till they get a winner of that, and that is an additional playoff game.
Wow.
And we should add the top six are determined by FIFA ranking.
Yeah, so right now...
Is this fair? Do you think it's fair?
That's the question that everyone's asking.
Yeah.
So everyone... We'll have more time to talk about this on Thursday when we can digest it. Oh, sorry, Monday, because it is Thursday. So everyone send us your emails what you think. We've already gotten a few Canadian fans who are PO'd.
Yeah.
Canada right now is 9th. Or 8th?
8th, I believe.
So Panama is the first team out as 7th. It's Canada and then Curaçao, I think, are one spot apart. El Salvador is the 6th team right now to get in. So those are, and then you've got USA, Mexico, Costa Rica. So the bigger teams, obviously, in the Hex already. Is it fair? Is unclear. One of the things CONCACAF is focusing on is the Nations League, which is a tournament style that they've launched to get more games for the lower teams. So for 2018 World Cup qualifying, in the middle of 2015, there were 7 teams in CONCACAF that were already eliminated. So 3.5 years before the tournament started, they were already basically out of the World Cup, and then they don't have games anymore. So in adding the Nations League, you lose international windows to put on World Cup qualifying. So I think that's the idea for CONCACAF is to try and give more games to the lower teams while keeping the Hex, which I think was the thing we thought it was going to go away 2 cycles ago, I believe, and people were pretty heartbroken about that. Is it fair? I don't know. Does anyone?
Well, it adds a little bit of extra swerve to the friendlies because now you have to, a little bit like basketball or college soccer teams have to pick their preseason games for RPI.
College football, too.
College football have to pick games for RPI and rankings. Now you'll see Canada, you'll see Honduras and El Salvador pick their friendlies very strategically to maximize the potential points they can get in those FIFA rankings.
So it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. It also means these Nation Leagues games are massive. Canada plays the U.S. in Nations League this fall. That is a big game to get points to try and jump up over the other teams. El Salvador currently sitting sixth. A lot of people complaining about that. They've beaten Haiti. They've beaten Canada. They've knocked off Cuba. They've played teams in CONCACAF. They beat Peru as well over the last year to earn that spot. They almost got out of the group stage as well in this Gold Cup. So we'll see what happens there. Let us know what you think at Extra Time. Of course, hit us up on Twitter as well. We'll go through all of that on Monday. It'll be interesting to see what the reaction is, especially from Canada. I'd love to see Canada qualify for a World Cup. They haven't done much to earn it over the last 30 years. So to be that upset, I don't know. We'll see how this works out. The Canadian Championship kicking off for MLS teams yesterday. They face off against Canadian Premier League teams for the first time ever. That was historic. But first, we're going to start with the U.S. Open Cup. Quarterfinals happening on Wednesday night, ESPN Plus. Every game has been streamed on ESPN Plus.
Oh, I've been watching. I've been watching. Yeah, welcome back, you two.
Yeah, the smooth,
excellent job, by the way.
Bobby and Gus.
Smooth is not what we call it. Frenetic, excited, and happy is what we call it. Me and Bobby were down at Exploria Stadium for Orlando City versus NYCFC on Wednesday night in the quarterfinals. Neither of those teams have ever been to a semifinal. And the highlight of the game did not occur on the field, Bobby. The fans behind the Orlando City goal, it went to penalty kicks in this game. NYCFC, in classic fashion, decides to shoot on the side opposite of the supporter section, which had no fans in it, was restricted. And then, Bobby, the exodus began. It was the second parade of the day. The first one in New York, the second one in Orlando.
Mad dash. And we didn't even notice at first. It took us about 15 seconds to say, what is going on? You could see through the concourse, just in between the two levels of the stands, people sprinting from the wall across the 140 yards. But
gotta
then they were blocked off.
In.
So then they get to the corner. They get to that side. But security didn't let them through. Security said, you have to stay in the corner. You can't go behind the goal. And someone overruled.
So we're standing up in the press box, and you can see the fans flooding into the one little corner section. They're trying to push all these fans in, and you just see more and more fans coming. It's like, they're not all going to fit in there. And all of a sudden, someone makes the decision to break through, and it was like a flood of humanity. It was one of the best things I've ever seen at a soccer stadium. And they won.
It worked.
That has to be the reason why.
It worked. I've never seen anything like that. When I was watching the highlights and I saw that happen, I was like, oh my. It was really cool. It was really cool. And I give the Orlando fans so much credit for just taking the initiative, being like, you know what? Uh-uh. Like, we're gonna matter. We're gonna affect the outcome of this. And they did. I mean, geez.
Yeah, they were loud. They were intense.
Great.
A little credit goes to Will Johnson because he started waving them all.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, someone's going up to him after the game and being like, hey, could you not do that next time?
Could
you not instigate our fans?
It was great.
But it worked out. Adam Grinwitz, backup goalkeeper, hasn't started a game in MLS, made two saves, got Orlando through. They will face off against Atlanta United in the next round, the draw occurring in just a little bit, actually, on U.S. Soccer to see who will host that. And then on the other side, Minnesota United knocking off New Mexico United, one of the two last USL teams. And then the night ended with LAFC falling at home against Portland. So Portland, Atlanta, Minnesota, Orlando, those are the four teams left. None of them have ever won the U.S. Open Cup. It'll be a historic moment for one of these clubs, but for probably different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Who does this matter the most for? Who is this biggest for? Who would you like to see win? Any of those ways you want to choose to answer that?
There's so many reasons for different teams. You know, like, God, you could go so many ways for this. I mean, my initial thought is Portland, just because of the history of that club. And, you know, I think it would, knowing the supporters' culture there and what another trophy would mean to them, and just kind of add it to their already impressive collection. Like, I that was what initially comes to mind. But then I'm thinking of Orlando and how they haven't even made
the
playoffs.
It's
and it's like, then you get this trophy. I don't know. You can make a case for.
Is it kind of
so
shocking
many.
That Portland has never won the Open Cup?
Yeah.
I mean, to have the depth of history that they have as a club and not have an Open Cup.
Yeah.
Just surprising to me.
Yeah, that is.
But I'm not going with them. I think this is clearly biggest for Orlando. I think they need this the most right now. I think out of all these teams, Atlanta, they got their trophy last year. And then Portland they've gotten trophies. They've been around it. I think they're going to be right in the thick of things, proving with a huge win against LAFC to actually be one of the teams that could contend to go to MLS Cup and potentially win it with the way they're playing right now. I watched this game, and I just could not be more impressed by them. The way they got behind the ball, they fought, they didn't try to go toe-to-toe. There was no chance you could do that in a game like this against LAFC, but they held strong, and they were dangerous on the break. Yes, it was a little bit of a lucky goal or unlucky goal, depending on which side you're on there, with Harvey getting a touch on it, and then Bobasi does a good job of just kind of getting it before keeper gets the feet set. So it was a nice little finish from him. But
the king,
I'm impressed. I was really impressed by Portland going to LAFC and kind of digging it out. They really created a little bit of a formula of how to go after LAFC. They were very physical with Carlos Vela all game. That's what everybody does now. But you could see a little bit of worry there for LAFC, because you saw this last year. They lost at home in a one-off knockout tournament. Again, quarterfinals, they lose at home. Physical play throughout the course of the season, the intricate passing patterns, the pressing, the possession, all that is beautiful and likely why they're going to run away with the supporter shield, I still think. But it does pose a question, especially with the new format of one match. Mm. And it made me start thinking about this formula, actually, and this change with the tournament, to say this might not favor the best teams always, because you would think in a two-leg situation, maybe they would be the better team over the duration of both legs.
At some point, Carlos Vela breaks through in 180 minutes.
Yes, where this is a little bit tricky, where if you can really just button down the hatches for a little bit, try and hit on the counter, and Portland may be the best team suited to be able to go after them in that case scenario. But I lost my train of thought. I'm going back to Orlando, because I think Minnesota is going to be in the playoffs. I've picked them preseason. I really like what they have going there with that team. They're playing amazing right now on a real roll, have a lot of momentum, scoring a bunch of goals. And Orlando, to me, still has the most to win. They've never made the playoffs before, and they're so close. That's the beautiful That's thing about the Open Cup. They're so close to being there. So if they can get through and get a trophy, that would be tremendous for this club.
It's kind of the Philadelphia Union story over the last few years, right, of just – it's one opportunity to get a trophy. By the way, for your Portland Timbers comment, I did some quick research. So NASL teams didn't play in the Open Cup back in the day. And then after NASL, Portland Timbers didn't enter for a while as well. So they didn't start entering until 2001. They were a USL
team. Didn't even want to win it.
Yeah, they don't even want to win it. Only lame teams like the Seattle Sounders care about winning the Open Cup. That one's for my producer,
Chicago
Anders.
Chicago Fire.
Which was one of the things, you knew Bob wants to win this. Like, you know from his history that it means so much to him. Let's give a quick shout out, though, to New Mexico United and St. Louis FC. The last two USL teams standing, New Mexico in their first ever year as a team. Everything that's going on in Albuquerque is so cool about that team. I was down there last week watching just stickers, jerseys, flags, scarves. Everyone knew about the team, and you could just go up and talk to random people. Also, having Meow Wolf on your jersey is pretty cool. They knocked off Dallas and Colorado on their run. They played all of their MLS teams away. Took a 1-0 lead against Minnesota. It's pretty good. Lost 6-1. That's less good. But things happen. And then St. Louis beat Chicago and Cincinnati, and then falling to Atlanta United. They only trailed 1-0 in the final 80 through the 80 or so minutes before the penalty kick that Joseph put away. So shout out to those two squads for their run. It's been fun to watch USL Championship this year. More clubs coming in next year, so keep your eye on that one. And then the Canadian Championship, as I mentioned, first time ever Canadian Premier League teams facing off against MLS teams, and both of them drew. What else do you want? What more? Are you not entertained? Montreal and Vancouver in that one facing off against the York 9. I don't know if the word "the" goes in front of that. I don't think it does. York 9. Ryan Telfair, another screamer. That man scores goals. And then Cavalry FC drawing against Vancouver. That was the first leg of the third round, because we've already gone through CONCACAF qualifying and Open Cup. So if I could just get one more format in here for you guys, that sounds really entertaining. For everyone. So it was a historic moment. It was pretty cool up in Canada. Down here in the U.S., I already mentioned it. The Philadelphia Union, a ton of history in the Open Cup. Jim Curtin, who's won this trophy, I believe you were alongside him?
Yes. Yes, for one of them. He's got two, though.
How does he party after? Is he Megan Rapinoe style, Ashlyn Harris? He just got a contract extension, so he can say anything.
There was no Instagram at the time, so we're going to leave it a mystery.
Well, let's go to the man himself, Jim Curtin, down in Philadelphia for our AT&T call to the field, coming off that contract extension. Jim, how does job security feel? Does this mean you can just spout off and say whatever you want right now?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, David, Kalen, and Bobby. I think I maybe owe a percentage to Bobby because he supported us, and actually Kalen as well through the years. But no, I owe a ton to the players. They've had a great first 20 games of the season and still have a lot of work to do, but obviously a lot of the credit obviously goes to them.
So just so you know, all money that goes through Bobby Warshaw cycled through my LLC, so I'll get you that information when we're done. Let's talk, though, about how this went down. Of course, this whole year you're working under Ernst Tanner. You come into the year on a one-year deal. When did he approach you about the extension? What was the conversation? What was the reasoning?
Well, look, I think if you have to almost rewind to, when Ernie took the job at U.S. Soccer. There was obviously a big transition at our club. And timing-wise, Ernst came in midway through what was a good, 50-point year for us last year. But fairly, we didn't know each other perfectly. They're still getting used to each other. So, again, when he was here for the second half of last year, a good relationship had formed. But at the same time, I was understanding in that all he could do was along the contract for one season, which was unfortunate timing, but at the same time, at the end of the day, all of us coaches, head coaches in Major League Soccer are interim coaches because we have pressure every day to prove ourselves. So it can be over quickly, and I respected that. And Ernst and I had a relationship dating back to, a long time ago when I visited the Hoffenheim's Youth Academy and learned under some of their coaches. So I knew him. The relationship kind of evolved. We finished the season decent last year with 50 points and then have started this year good, not perfect, but in a pretty good way and are in a good spot in the table. And Ernst, I'm very grateful for him, for recognizing now that the players have put in a lot of hard work. Our staff has put in a lot of hard work. And now doing it at this point of the year where now it's behind me, I can have peace of mind and focus on the most important thing, which is us making a run in the playoffs.
Jim, you mentioned that every professional coach is basically working on a one-day contract. But what is it like from a human experience to actually be on that one-year deal? Does it feel different than some of the other circumstances?
It's hard. Yeah, look, I can't – I'm not going to lie on that and say it's an easy situation. Obviously, I have three children. I have families. I'm from the city of Philadelphia, so I maybe wanted it more and then have less likelihood to chase other opportunities. So I really wanted to be here. And again, I've learned a lot along my way. I'd say the trajectory of coaching in the youth academy gave me a ton of perspective. I could try new things with young players. I learned a ton working with both boys and girls in the Union's Youth Academy of all ages, and then was lucky enough to be an assistant coach and eventually a head coach. And I think at each level you learn a lot of what to do, but maybe more importantly, what not to do and what to say. So only having the 1 year security though is difficult for sure. So now with this commitment, I can kind of I've always had an eye, especially with the club's philosophy on the future. I couldn't let that 1 year kind of make me change who I am as a coach. And I'm a coach that believes in young players from our academy. I still wanted to put them on the field. I'd be doing a disservice to myself and what the club stands for if I changed and was selfish and just made decisions based on getting the next result. And you kind of have to have a longer scope on things, but obviously now a little more security does go a long way. And again, I want to repay that security to Ernst, to Mr. Sugarman, the owner, and everybody else as we move forward now the rest of the season.
And you said that you didn't want to change in this 1 year, but you kind of had to change. The club's philosophy changed when Ernst Tanner arrived. What has that process been like going from the way you played for your first few years in charge to now how Ernst Tanner wants you to play?
So yeah, I would say that soccer wise, I think I learned and maybe still learn new things that I was a believer in as well. I think everybody wants to press. So when I say I didn't want to change, it was more from the standpoint of philosophically, I still believe in young players. That doesn't change what formation we play or what style we try to play. So I think if you guys touched on it a lot last year, we were a team that was very, very good with the ball and maybe didn't score our chances perfectly, but we were very good in possession. And when Ernst came in, he recognized that and didn't want to do a complete change and completely run from that side of things. What he did implement and what I have grown to really like is how you press teams based on the opponent, where you press on the field, which traps you set in terms of pressing cues where you want to win the ball based on their weakness and maybe their weakest player on the field, and doing that game in and game out. And that in turn has helped us kind of enhance what we were already good at, which was keeping the ball. So now we win the ball higher up the field. Statistically and data-wise, us, LAFC, are some of the teams that win the ball as close to our own goal as possible. And that's no coincidence that good defending and that good maybe principles that we took from Ernst and Red Bull has led to us being, you know, towards the top of the league in terms of scoring. So I think I've evolved in terms of how I see the game, with Ernst's leadership and the different ideas that we've taken. But certainly there was an adjustment period for sure. It took a little bit of buy-in from the players in preseason in terms of, you know, why are we changing what we were already good at? We were really good with the ball, and it seems like now we're just focusing only on defending and pressing. But once we had some success, with success comes that buy-in from the players. And I can actually point to the moment where they had the full buy-in. It was actually in a preseason game, which everybody will joke and say preseason games don't mean anything. But in this instance, it did, because we pressed Red Bull very high and beat them. It wound up being 3-1 in the preseason, but it was a comfortable 3-1. And the guys kind of clicked and said, hey, this is real. This works. And it benefits all of us.
Jim, I want to ask you a little bit more about what you said about the philosophy of playing young players, because you guys have become in the top tier of developing homegrowns, helping them take the next step of their career. What have you done well in that, and what do you think you could actually do a little bit better moving forward?
Yeah, so I think what we've done well as a club is we have relationships all through from our academy to our Bethlehem Steel team and to our first team. So, for example, Brendan Burke and I have a very good working relationship. We're in constant contact. They train with us every day. I used to coach in the academy. I have a lot of good friendships and relationships there. For example, Fred just trained with our first team today and took parts of our session. He's Fred, a former MLS player that's now coaching in the youth academy. So we have that interaction constantly, that dialogue where we're pulling academy players up and seeing how they sink or swim with the first team, or maybe if they're ready to make a move to play in minutes with the Steel and then ultimately signing them. So I think that communication and having worked at every level within the club has helped me and is one of our real strengths. I think the next step, though, for the club, and it's a big one, is, and again, sometimes people take this the wrong way and they think it's just we just want to sell off all our best players, but we have to sell our first homegrown. You're seeing really good performances from our guys, from Trusty, McKenzie. You've seen now Brendan Aaronson take a big role, Matt Freeze in goal this year. You know, so we've taken big steps that way and they're playing a lot of minutes, Bobby, but now the next step is can we cash in on the open market and now sell one of them for a couple of million dollars and invest that back into the club? Maybe that's with a big TAM player, a DP player, or investing that money back into the academy. I think that's a process that takes time for sure. I think Dallas is maybe ahead of us in terms of just how long they've been doing it. Red Bull would be another one that's been doing it well. But I think that's our next step as a club. People forget we're still kind of the newer kids of the block in the academy. And I think the job that Richie Graham and our academy has, and I think you've been out to the school and the work that they've done there is incredible. And that's where I think we have a real competitive advantage. Our school I put up against any institution in the country in terms of the academics that the kids are getting and obviously the soccer education as well.
Well, Jim, we appreciate you taking the time to join us on a festive week for you. Congratulations once again from us, from everyone at Major League Soccer. We've looked forward to watching more of your team play throughout the year. Sitting in first place in the Eastern Conference right now, the Philadelphia Union, Jim Curtin signing a 2-year extension under that club to coach his hometown club. Jim, congratulations. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, guys, and keep up the good work.
Congratulations again to Jim Curtin on his contract extension. This Philadelphia Union team has been one of the most fun to watch this year over the last few years. So it's exciting to see Jim keep going and just a good guy.
He's best.
Like,
love him.
No one else, no other coach would be friends with me, so I need Jim Curtin to stay in the league, especially Bobby here. He needs his long time conversations. Moving on, in the Eastern Conference, big moves already being made. The transfer window opening up on July 9th on Tuesday, so teams now officially can bring those players in and start using them in Major League Soccer, as well as in Canadian Championship and U.S. Open Cup. The New England Revolution signing Gustavo Bow, like bow and arrow, I think that's right. From originally Argentina, but coming to New England from Club Tijuana in Mexico. The rumor sounds like $6 to $7 million, which would be a top 15 signing expense wise all time in Major League Soccer. 29 years old, scored 10 goals for Tijuana last year, has scored 10 goals the last few years for a couple different teams. But Bobby, this, we know Bruce Arena, he was going to come in, take it slow, figure it out. Then all of a sudden they hit the ground running, and now he's making a massive signing.
Yeah, and it's a lot of money to spend on a 29-year-old. We should start there. I mean, he's a very good player, and we'll get into that, but it's a big transfer fee for a 29-year-old who you probably will not be able to move on for anything close to that. This, you would think, is the final big moment of his career. As a player, I use the word crafty when I went back and watched some of his games when I watched him in Liga MX. I asked my friend John Arnold, who covers Liga MX for Goal.com. He used the word sneaky. You think he's going to go run behind. He checks. You think he's going to check. He takes off. He's not slow, but not fast. I would say he's similar pace to Juan Agudelo, which I think of as, yes, you're quick, but you're not quick in striker terms. You're just kind of quick enough to be good enough to be a striker, if that makes sense. He can play central. He can play wide. I don't think it changes how the Revs go about their game. They've gone back and forth between a 4-4-2 and a 4-2-3-1. So I would expect him to either play up top or wide, depending on how Bruce Arena wants to go about it.
Teal Bunbury has played that center forward position. He's played it pretty well since Bruce took over. Maybe you don't want to lock yourself into that, and so you go out and make a signing. But it's an interesting, I guess, statement of intent from Bruce Arena or from the New England Revolution in his first signing being kind of a win now 29-year-old who's got to hit the ground running type signing.
But that's exactly what we were talking about. I mean, like, he, as Bobby said, like, this is a 29-year-old guy. It's not like he's a 24-year-old kid. Like, it's definitely a win now situation, but that's what Bruce Arena does. Yeah. Like, that's his mojo. So I, and the thing is, I'm not sure, I don't know how it's going to fit in with, you know, you think about like Carlos Heel up front and Teal Bunbury playing well. Like, will this actually come to fruition there? It's great, it's cool, like, he's a good player, yeah. But I'm kind of like, I don't really know if this was the best
one
move.
One other point to add too is three reference points for you. Players who came for big money from Liga MX: one, Maxi Morales; two, Raul Ruy Diaz; and three, Brian Fernandez. There have been others who haven't been that successful, but those, if you're the New England Revolution, if you're their fan base, those are the three reference points you're hoping to match with this signing.
And Caitlin, the fan base is the big thing, where it's been tough for a year or two, and now they got a new coach, they got a new GM, same guy in both, they're starting to win some games, and now they make a big signing, a signing bigger than anything they've made probably since Jermaine Jones. It's at least, if anything, on the field, off the field, it's a boost to that whole community.
Absolutely. But I think it's kind of funny because I think we may be trapped a little bit in this idea of what an MLS signing should look like now, where we're saying, like, if it's not 21 to 24,
right. It's not Miguel Almirón.
It's not going to, you know, that's not a great signing. But 29 is not ancient by any means. This guy could be around for the next 3-4 years, no problem, at his prime, his peak, to be able to really do some damage for them. And yes, Bruce didn't come there to do a 20-year, 10-year project, right? Like, he is an experienced veteran coach with championship experience that you're bringing in to get to the playoffs this year. And they're already showing they're trending that direction real close right now. This is the type of signing where before you say, okay, maybe Teal, does he tail off in the playoffs or as you get closer to it? Do you need somebody to push him? Do you need someone to rely on for goals? We've seen Portland go out and make a big signing to be able to get a top player from Liga MX. I've seen the way it's been able to transform them from a team that was struggling. Yes, I know they're on the road in the beginning of the season, to now being a team that can really do some damage against LAFC and the likes of the West. I think this is the type of signing where it says maybe the Revs are more serious than we realized, or than we thought about just flirting with the playoffs, but a little bit more of a statement of intent that they want to do some damage.
1 point out of the playoffs right now for New England. They haven't lost a game since May 6th. It's now July 11th. So that's 2 months, obviously with some international break in there, as well as an Open Cup loss. But that's 2 months where they've been good basically the entire reign of Bruce Arena, and then on top of that now making a big signing.
I just want to add to what Kalen said about the trending age of these signings. You're right, it doesn't have to be a Miguel Amarone signing, but I will say, if you go to pretty much any league, any team in the world, and that team or a member of that league were to make its most expensive signing in league history for a 29-year-old, and I think of a Robin Van Persie, I think of, for Arsenal, Aubameyang, these players will come in clearly in their prime, soon probably going to peak their prime. In world football, that's considered very risky. So I don't dislike the move, but anywhere you go, there's going to be questions about having your biggest money signing on a player 29 to 30. We'll have question marks.
Well, Kalen, just to make you happy, we're going to do good idea, bad idea now on a couple of rumors, a couple of signings. And we'll start off with a 22-year-old. Ooh.
Nice.
How's that feel, Kalen?
What team, what club is he going to?
Toronto FC, Erickson Gallardo, a winger from Zamora in Venezuela. He has played over 110 games for Zamora, 11 goals, 19 assists, one cap in February for the Venezuelan national team. This was the TAM winger we've been hearing about basically since they got Pozuelo. They kept saying, there's one more move, maybe two more moves coming. We'll get to that in a second, Bobby. Good idea, bad idea here?
Good idea. This is exactly what Toronto needed. They're so good down the middle with the addition of Omar and Michael and Pozuelo and Josie, but what this team has been missing, and it was hidden because they had Jovinko and they were so talented, this team has not had real width or real pace from wide areas in 4 or 5 years. And it seems to me that Greg Vanney would like to play something other than the 4-4-2. He would like to have width to his game plan. And that's what he's getting with Gallardo, a player who is fast, who can play wide, who can stretch teams both vertically and horizontally.
It's been tough running for Toronto FC. They will get Josie back. They'll play Montreal this weekend, so a nice rivalry game to get back into it. You get Josie back, maybe you get some speed on the wings. They just traded with the Columbus Crew, by the way. Tim Bezbachenko and Ollie Curtis, very friendly, still getting things done. I'm impressed by the maturity of that, to leave and then still work together. I think they're taking what Megan Rapinoe said, and we're all building each other up rather than pulling each other down. Not like you, Kalen. I don't believe in your build-up ability. Patrick Mullins is headed to Toronto FC in exchange for Jordan Hamilton, and then Crew will pay a little bit of Mullins' contract as well on the back of this. And the Columbus Crew will get the right a first refusal to a player who is unknown. This is very baseball-y. I will tell you, I reached out to my sources with Toronto FC. They said that the player was named David Goss, so I think they were messing with me because I don't remember getting a legitimate contract offer from Toronto FC when I moved overseas, but that cannot be confirmed. On top of that, for Columbus Crew, they traded Robinho, who they signed this offseason, to Orlando City. The number for how much Columbus is getting in return in TAM is still up in the air. Obviously, Orlando says less and Columbus says more, so maybe we'll land somewhere in the middle. So some moves being made by Tim Bezbachenko, but because of these moves, there's rumors out there that Toronto FC has room for one more TAM signing. Let's stick to wingers, Bobby. Mm-hmm. We've heard these rumors about Pavone from Boca Juniors to the LA Galaxy. Argentine sources are saying it's like right on the line. I don't know how many Argentine sources know about how many designated players are allowed on an MLS roster. Good idea, bad idea, and is this even possible?
Love this idea. Is it possible? You're right. They would have to figure out what to do with Roman Alessandrini, maybe extending his contract so that they can buy him down with TAM. Do they try and trade him? But if they can figure out the DPs, it seems to me if Pavone is available for a price that you can afford, and the number I heard was $12 million for 50%, which would put his overall valuation at $24 million, which all in would make him the most expensive signing in league history, you have to go for it. He was a player who was, and correct me if I'm wrong here, David, the brightest young star in Argentina just 12 months ago.
He was the breakout player of the World Cup for them.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like this guy was going to end up at Manchester United, Real Madrid.
That's
in 12
what he thought,
months.
Too.
So if you're going to say that you can get him to Los Angeles Galaxy for only a $24 million valuation, you have to jump on that. I understand the risk, but it's one of those things, business-wise, it's worth going for.
Kalen, is part of the risk that he thought he was going to be at Man U, and what's he going to do mentally when he shows up to the LA Galaxy?
Like the PT Martinez.
Ooh, you said it. I didn't.
No, I would not worry about that. If you can get a player of that quality, plus you also have
plus he's 23 years old, which you love.
You also have a manager that I would trust to be able to bring him along. If it similarly to the way you saw Tata Martino being able to take some of these young players from South America and bring them up to MLS as a way to get to Europe, I think Scalotto could definitely provide that same type of credibility coming from Boca, and then being able to use his connections as well abroad to say, hey, come here, play with Zlatan, score some goals. It's a big market. You're in Los Angeles. We've got a real team near the top of the West. Come for a year or two. It's not maybe a long time signing, you know, for the next 10, 12 years. Right. But it might be one that could definitely be worth it. I agree with Bobby. If you got a chance at this one, you have to take that swing.
It's so cool to hear Scalotto come to MLS. Apparently, he spoke with Valeri when Valeri chose to come, and then spoke with Almiron as well. Now he's going to bring
ambassador.
Pavone. Pavone's going to talk to people, and this is how it all rolls, guys. Friends
love
being friends. And everyone, turn it on around. It would be awesome to see this player come to MLS. We'll see what happens.
I just want to point out the trickle-up that's been happening. Valeri led to Piatti, who is a little bit higher on the pecking order in Argentina. Valeri led to an Almiron, who is a little bit even more of a brighter star, which led to, I don't know if Barco's in that, maybe Barco's in the Almiron category, which leads to PT Martinez. You can just see over the last 6 or 7 years, one rung up the ladder in terms of those prospects and those players.
And now we're basically living in Argentina, and it's heaven for anyone who likes steak or red wine.
And
it's
now
been fantastic.
Yes, exactly.
Although, if you're talking to Domé Torrent, don't talk to him about wine. Apparently, him and Gio Savarese had an argument about red and white wine on the field.
I'm going to be honest with you, David, that was not actually what the argument was about.
Oh, really? Yeah. You don't think at halftime of a professional soccer game they were talking about wine? Shocking. Interesting enough, Robin Laud, a 26-year-old Finnish center mid, left winger, 33 caps for Finland, currently in Spain with Sporting Gijon. Did play in Greece with Panathinaikos, so shout out to Andrew Wiebe. That's my Andrew Wiebe reference for the show, by the way, because he's on vacation in Greece. And happy birthday to Andrew. I hope he's not watching or listening to this at this point. He's on a private boat sailing around the Greek Isles.
Today's
for
his birthday?
10 days yesterday. But in Greece, so I think Greece is 24 hours ahead and beyond, behind, whatever you choose. Jeez. That's how it works, yes. So enjoy that one, Andrew. But you mentioned Minnesota. You like what they're doing, bringing in a 26-year-old TAM signing. That's a, once again, win now signing. That's a guy who's going to play today. You've got Darwin Kintero. You've got Kevin Molino. But clearly Minnesota knows you got to make the playoffs in 2019.
You have to make the playoffs in 2019. And Adrian Heath needs to make the playoffs in 2019. And it is kind of that do or die situation for them right now. But they've won, what, like 7 games in a row, including the U.S. Open Cup game? They're flying. They're flying. So I love this. Anything that they can do to keep bolstering that roster. And you get guys like Quintero getting hot now. Like, that's bodes very well for the Loons.
Mason Toy scoring a couple of goals as well. But Laud could step in, could push Quintero wide, something like that. You could see a little bit of a different look, but it doesn't seem to be a negative thing. Quintero felt like got in a funk. Now he's breaking back out. It might be what he needs. Let's get into the like total rumor section here, guys. This is my favorite thing that's happened in the last week. This is Anfield, which apparently is a blog. These are your people. This is on you.
Oh,
everything that's about to happen.
We can agree we would trust it more if it was This Is United.
Nice.
That's a more trustworthy blog.
Cool.
Not Ed.
Your British accent's much better than Bobby's. Danny Alves.
I'll go full Scouse on you guys, I swear to God.
Danny Alves. Not sure you guys have ever heard of him. Brazilian. Technically plays fullback.
Is this like the Rubinho this is a Rubinho situation? This is a different Rubinho?
Yeah, there's a different Rubinho. So Danny Alves, the Danny Alves, 36 years old, just won Copa America with Brazil. Apparently Liverpool wants to sign him as a backup fullback, but This Is Anfield is worried because they interviewed Kleberson, who is a Brazilian legend and currently part of the Philadelphia Union Academy staff. And Kleberson said, I want to get Danny Alves to join me in MLS. He's a phenomenal player with amazing quality. Done.
Over Ray Gattis? Are you kidding me? Show some respect.
Respect to my king. You're right.
Top of the table, Philadelphia Union. 36-year-old right back. Nah.
This is such a Philadelphia Union signing. They always go out and get Brazilian veterans.
Close your eyes 1 second. Close your eyes, David. Envision this.
Just don't hit me.
Danny Alves at right back. Ilsinho at right wing.
What more could you want?
For opponents who want to attack down the left wing, I think they would agree with you as well. There'll be acres of space. Beautiful. So do I have to even say this? Good idea, bad idea?
Weird.
Weird. Just odd. Strange.
It's
bizarre.
It's just a match made in heaven. It's even Philly building through the academy, signing Danny Alves.
Ashley, I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate it. Buck and some change for like 4 years and was awesome.
It's intriguing.
Yeah. The banks of the Chester River, very similar to living in LA, like Ashley called it. We'll see we will keep you guys up to date every single episode of Extra Time about what's occurring in the Danny Alves Philadelphia Union saga. We promise on that one. A couple other quick rumors. Renato Tapia's agent says that he has MLS offers. I wrote an article saying which Copa America players I want to see in MLS. Renato Tapia is in that. I'm pretty sure that's what his agent's talking about. Which
you're the one that started the rumor.
Which, if true, would be amazing, but a very good Peruvian defensive midfielder who could fit on most teams in MLS. And then one last one here, Nacho Piatti. There are rumors that a different Argentine team besides San Lorenzo wants to bring him back to Argentina. And Susanna Montrella said no. They said, not only no, we have an option on a deal for 2020. Nacho Piatti is here for 2020. Didn't like 4 months ago he said this was his last year?
He basically said goodbye to Montreal, said au revoir. Au revoir, do something like that. I'm still in my Paris mode here. I don't know. This is weird to me because he's 34?
Yeah.
34 years old. He's played in, five games this year? I mean, it's something like that. I mean, injuries have to be a massive concern surrounding Nacho Piatti right now. And so, if you're Montreal, are you thinking, is this still the guy that we can build this team around? If he's not, I mean, he's literally played no games this year. So I don't know. I mean, if you can get some money for this guy,
Yeah.
Just potentially. I mean, I love him.
You know him and be like, you only play 15 minutes a game when we need a goal?
There you go. That's the move.
Probably makes a little
difference. That's the move. But let me just put it out there. I love Nacho Piatti. I love him when he's healthy and when he's playing.
Yeah, he's been the heart of that team, but 100%. He's not on that team
right
now.
He's not on that team. He hasn't been on this team all season.
So if they can get something for him, maybe it makes more sense. Arch Bell, who's a legend as well, you should follow him on Twitter. He says that Deportivo La Coruña is currently monitoring Samuel Piatti. Piet played in their academy and on their B team for a number of years. It would probably be a pretty big blow for Montreal to lose both of those guys in one window, but we'll see what happens. Some other rumors going on. SKC looking at a left back. FC Cincinnati looking at probably 12 players across the field to play all 11 positions, but unsure on that one. Non-MLS, but U.S. soccer. It sounds like Tyler Boyd will go to Besiktas. Come to Besiktas!
Besiktas!
I think we just want to say that.
I don't think we have anything to say about it.
There was rumors that he might come to MLS. Does anyone feel strongly that he's not?
What's Kyle Larin's status?
He is going on loan to Belgium for the year. There was rumors, I think, that Vancouver was actually going to try and bring him in on that loan, but it ends up that he stays in Europe and he's going to Belgium, which has great food. So it's not a bad move for him. Moving on here for the weekend, we've got an incredible weekend of MLS action. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 3 games on Friday, and then an epic doubleheader on Sunday. Seattle Sounders hosting Atlanta United on ESPN at 3:55 p.m. Eastern time. Yes, that is correct. 3:55 p.m. Eastern time. These two teams, when you think about Major League Soccer, in its next era, you think about the Seattle Sounders, the team that maybe helped push it to the next level when they came into the league, started selling out CenturyLink Field, got those crowds, got players like Freddie Montero in their prime to come to that team, the fan base they have, and then it was taken to another level by Atlanta United just right after that, just a few years ago, and they have put Major League Soccer, I think, on a new pedestal of where you stand in the world for transfers, where you stand in terms of relevance for fans, for media, all these things. These maybe are two of the biggest clubs in Major League Soccer, and we're going to see them face off on Sunday in Seattle. Could be an MLS Cup preview as well. You never know. Bobby, when you look at these two teams going head-to-head, what do you see?
Well, I just want to go back to what you said about their stature within the league, because we've talked about the players that changed the paradigms in Major League Soccer: David Beckham, Miguel Almirón, Alfonso Davies, and Jovinko. I think there's also 4 clubs that changed the paradigm. They fundamentally changed the way Major League Soccer went about its business and the way it was done on a daily basis. The LA Galaxy, with David Beckham, with the stars they brought in, they raised the level. I think number two was Seattle, because their fans set a new bar on what could be expected and what should happen with fans. I think number three was Atlanta United, because they took the spending and the investment to a new level. And they said, if you want to keep up, you need to invest with us, or you need to find ways to raise money, homegrown players probably, to therefore keep up with us. FC Dallas might be the next one. Mm-hmm. With their homegrowns, maybe LAFC are the next one with the way they play the game. But yeah, these are the two teams who have most recently changed the paradigm and changed the way Major League Soccer went about its day-to-day function.
Bobby is also, I keep being the old head on this.
I feel like Kalen's so upset right now.
I feel like the old head always, but how do you not have a list with DC United as the number one team? That's the team that started with a dynasty in MLS.
I just don't know if you can change a paradigm when you were the first ever. Like, yeah, that was just the league as we knew it.
How about that?
That's fair. I'm perfectly okay with that. That's a good shout.
One of the players, you mentioned five players that have changed the league. It seemed like one of them could be PT Martinez when he came in this offseason, in his prime, was voted South American Player of the Year.
That's called a Jovinko, but continue.
Okay, did Jovinko win South American Player of the Year?
No, but I'll continue.
Because it's not South American. Very good point, Bobby. I agree with you on that one. PT Martinez, though, taken off early against the New York Red Bulls last weekend, and then Frank DeBoer said, I want 11 men who work hard, not 10 or 9 or 8 men. Everybody has to work, especially in these types of games. These are very difficult games. We had to win those duels. Coming off the back of that, there was rumors that maybe PT Martinez wasn't in the right place, and maybe Atlanta United, after all the investment, after locking him in as the guy who was going to replace Almirón, he was going to go out on loan. It's since been denied by Frank DeBoer. PT Martinez, supposed to be your star player, going out on loan, not something we really see in Major League Soccer. What's your thoughts there?
You can't send him out on loan. If you did your due diligence, and we think that they did, we think that Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra are good at their jobs, and they knew that they believed in his ability as a player. They knew that he fit in with what they were trying to do with that club. Maybe it wasn't Frank DeBoer, and that's another conversation in the way DeBoer wants to play. But if you believe that this player you have is talented and he can fit into what your club wants to be, you have to make these purchases. When you bring a player, as I say over and over, to a new country, to a new continent, to a new team, to a new language, and you totally uplift their life into a new situation, you have to do so with an acknowledgement that it's going to take time to adjust, that they won't hit the ground running. Miguel Almirón was amazing. Brian Fernandez, amazing. They are the outliers in the history of the way this goes down. If you're going to make that purchase, you need to make that purchase with the understanding and with the acceptance and the patience that it's going to take some time. So I don't know how you put all this money and all this investment into a player and not acknowledge that there needs to be a grace period to them settling into their new life.
I think the grace period thing is fair to a certain extent, because it's not like PT Martinez was coming over to, I don't know, you know, like a club that, you know, was very isolated. Atlanta's a big city. They have these state-of-the-art training facilities. It's this gorgeous new stadium. When the personal life adjustments seem to take focus over the play on the field, that's when I have a question. I'm like, is this guy a head case? You know, like, is this a case where, I mean, in some ways, I'm kind of like, are Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales just afraid to be like, you know what? Maybe we made a mistake and maybe this just wasn't the right fit. And I don't, you know, no harm, no foul there. Yeah, it's a lot of money, but like sometimes that just happens. But I'm more concerned that like PT Martinez has had, what, 6 months to kind of figure this out. And, you know, he did score a lovely goal. Kind of, you know, turned it around for the moment. But I just wonder if I have a problem when Soccer's supposed to be the common denominator, right? The thing that like you go back to and you have all these life adjustments and you get married and it's a new city and it's a new culture. Like if you can't figure it out, I just worry about like where his head is actually at and is that ultimately going to be a problem? And will he ever fit? Will it ever work out?
And if you send him out on loan and it doesn't go well,
right?
He loses value. Now you got to bring him back. What are you going to do with him? And it becomes something that's around the club's neck for a little while. So you make a very good point. That game for Seattle and Atlanta United will be followed up directly with the New York Derby, which should be a good one, at Red Bull Arena this time, that one on Fox Sports 1. The whole weekend gets started with a triple header on Friday night, DC United versus the New England Revolution on ESPN, and then a double header on Unimas and Twitter, Houston versus LAFC, and the Cali Classico, that one at 11 p.m. What's up, Kalen?
What do you mean?
I was just bringing the old head back into the show for a moment. Yeah.
Because can I go back to this PT Martinez thing?
You could go back to anything you want.
Okay, cool.
You have carte blanche.
Well, I think DeBoer is in a tough spot because he needs to stick with his player, right? And for all the reasons you mentioned, and I think a loan doesn't make any sense. I think DeBoer came out and said it was ridiculous. They weren't going to do that. But the problem is that having him on the field is clearly not working right now. And at times it's becoming a liability. And I think DeBoer has been pretty honest. I think he's very honest, sometimes to a fault. And yes, sometimes it gets a little bit lost in translation, but I think the core of it is there, that the work rate is not there. That's one thing that I can, that doesn't mistranslate.
Right.
And so the problem is that you need to kind of play him to get through this, or to see if you can get more out of him and get him past this point. And this whole time they've been basically saying, give him time. They've been trying to give him confidence. Even when he scored in this game against
St. Louis,
whole team comes around him because they're just like, yes, BT, come on, buddy. You can do this, you know, but he's a liability at times, and you have, especially in the middle of the pitch, because now he's not playing on the wing. They didn't suit him out there, and you play in the middle of the pitch. You play against that team. That game against Red Bull is a perfect example. That's a street fight, and at times you have to be up for it. Miguel Almiron was always up for it. Never questioned the work rate, track back, of course the quality. But this is a little bit of, when you look at PT and then you look at Barco, who for me has also been underwhelming. I don't rate either of them as all-stars this year. And I know they have quality and pedigree and potential, but it hasn't been there yet. And that just shows how difficult it is to get this one exactly right, and how special to me Miguel Almiron was.
Do they have to play PT Martinez? You could have said the same thing about Ezequiel Barco last year. I mean, you'll appreciate this more than anyone. Isn't it still mind-blowing that Atlanta United won MLS Cup with the most expensive player, an eight-figure player, on the bench? I mean, could they do the same this year if they were to start Joseph up top with Barco on one side, Villalba, or maybe Gressel on the other with other players in the middle? Do they have to start him?
Well, I don't know. We're going to find out.
I mean, LAFC, they got rid of Horta. They spend money. And to both those clubs, the price tag is not really, that's not a really an issue.
Right. They've got the money to spend, and now LAFC can add another DP.
But for them to get the best out of this club, the team, they need him to play better. They won't be able to get to the place they want to, which is back to MLS Cup, unless PT Martinez can get unlocked and get playing well.
Well, we'll see what happens that Friday night. Houston, LAFC, and the LA Galaxy, of course, San Jose, Cali Classico. Last time San Jose won it at Stanford Stadium just a week ago. Now this one in LA. And then on Saturday, seven games, starting with TFC versus Montreal, 7:30 p.m. on TVA and TSN4 up in Canada for a rivalry game. But Susanna, you're going to go a little somewhere else for the game you're going to watch on Saturday. You're sticking to your Minnesota United guns.
I'm so into Minnesota.
You're all
right
in.
Now. I think, like, I went to Allianz at one time, and I'm just like, oh, this is just, it's dreamy.
Is your FC Cincinnati for Weeby, because he went into March and now he's in
exactly.
love.
Yes, exactly. That's it. Now they're playing Dallas. They're 4-5 in the standings right now, and I believe we said it before, Minnesota's won like seven games in a row, and I want them to make the playoffs this year. I predicted they would make the playoffs at the beginning of the year.
So now they have to.
And now they have to because I said it, and I'm just so on board, and I really, and Dallas is a quality team as well, so I like the little battle there in the standings that they have, but I want this run to continue for Minnesota. I'm into it.
Everyone else feel good about that?
Yeah.
Everyone locked in on Minnesota now?
I'm all in. I'm looking at this LAFC Houston game, though. I think that's the one for me.
You're going to go back again on me.
Yeah. What do you mean?
I already passed over that one, and now you're going back.
Oh, did you?
That's your thing, Kalen.
Sorry.
No, stick to your brand.
I don't read the rundown.
You got that hat on backwards. Do your thing.
Houston can't win a game on the road. Doesn't matter. They're the second best home record behind LAFC. LAFC on short rest. Houston, dangerous on the break. Can get on the wings. I think LAFC, they're outside backs can get hurt, especially that matchup with Elise on the right-hand side. I think that could be a good one for them. But I think LAFC is going to be upset after they don't lose much. I think it's the second only home loss.
But they only have like 45 hours in between the two games.
Yeah, but I think that's going to be a good game. I don't know. I can't pick against LAFC after a loss.
And I think Houston knocked LAFC out of Open Cup last year.
Did they?
As well. I believe so. In a similar round, quarterfinal, semifinal, something like that. It should be a good one. The whole weekend's going to be phenomenal. Sunday, you can get it started here on MLSsoccer.com. Matchday Central, these three will be on the show starting at 3:30. I'll be out at Red Bull Arena. So if you're out there for either side, let me know. I'll be the one searching around for arepas or kebabs or anything else that's being cooked out in the parking lot. And if you're making stuff, invite me because I'll come eat your food as well.
I love that in Orlando, somebody went out of their way to send you a hummus place recommendation.
Aww. But it was at 10 p.m. and then we left at 6 a.m. the next morning. But I'm going back for All-Star and we will all be there for All-Star. We're excited about that. Skill Challenge homegrown game coming up as well. We'll talk about that next week. Thank you to Jim Curtin for taking the time to join us. Thank you to you three for being here. Thank you to Andrew Wiebe for not being here. Sometimes a negative is a plus. You never know what's going to happen. And thanks to our producer, Anders, as well. Have a great weekend, everyone. Enjoy your soccer.